Is the I, the self, the God of all universes, of which there are an infinite number, is 1250. To go from around 700 or so, which doesn't happen very often, on upwards is not a pleasant experience. It's not like the early, it's not like the high 500s. It is not exquisite kundalini energy coming up through you and pouring out through yourself in exquisite. What happens now, or what happened here and happened with the Buddha was, is the nervous system is overly taxed and goes into exquisite pain. It's like a burning sensation of red hot. It's like the nerves have become barbed wire, hot barbed wire. It's a horrible sensation, and it's throughout your whole aura, so you can't escape it no matter what. And this means that there's some awareness out. This signifies that there's something holding up the progression. Maybe that only happens if you're karmically destined to progress. Let's see. Yeah, I bet. That only happens if you're karmically destined to progress. Resist. Oh, okay. Oh, wow. So if you have the misfortune of this being karmically destined to progress, this consciousness keeps going, and it's not satisfied with 700. It should be. It's absolute totality, infinite bliss, the knowingness of the oneness of the divine presence. But something out of some place can force it to grow, and it goes beyond that. Then goes there's these horrible experiences which go on for years, and of you can be driving along perfectly fine, and suddenly a thought goes through the air somewhere, and this extreme discomfort starts, and you find that you find out what the error is, and you correct the error, usually in the form of a prayer, and then it disappears. So this goes on for quite a painful period of time. At the moment, let's see, I don't know if it was a moment, it seemed like a moment, at the time of which the mind disappeared, it was like obliterated by an infinite presence of crystal clarity, exquisite beauty, exquisite gentleness, and profound power beyond all imagination. All conceptions of power compared to the power of the presence is infinitesimal. So the mind is like, whatever is left of the mind is like obliterated. And for fun, some 30 years later, when I learned kinesiology, I asked, let's ask about it. That was the thought of an archangel resist. I want to give you some idea of power. In the pits of hell, the atheist says, beyond any hope, the atheist says, if there is a God, I ask him to help me. Then, infinite silence, then suddenly this infinite presence, absolute silence, and it was like you grabbed onto 50,000 volt. The power was so infinite. So the response to the prayer was a thought by that archangel, correct? Karmically thought. It's like a karmic, I say it funny, it's like an archangel was cruising by and he hears this screech from the pits of hell and he gives it a thought. Instantly. That which you were is totally obliterated for all time, and the radiance shines forth, and there you are, barely able to see in the light, you know? It just gave you a passing thought, I guess. I mean, this is as good a way to describe it as anything, how it comes about. All is an evolution of consciousness, and we call that evolution karmic. The word karma here does not mean reincarnation. Karma means that consciousness evolves and each thing becomes an expression of its essence, and we call that karma. You can't be a human being here sitting in a body without already the karmic inheritance that allows you to do so. So there's no point to worry about karma because that which you are is your karma. The ego is your karma. There's no necessity to look for where it arose from, any more than it's not too interesting how you broke an ankle. The problem is how to fix it. You know what I mean? As a physician, I don't care how you broke it. You fell down the kitchen stairs, you're having a battle with your wife. That's all immaterial. You want to fix what the condition is now, because the condition now is the inheritance of the past. It was the walking down the steps, the slipping on the banana peel, the argument with the spouse, the not paying attention. So however it arose karmically, as spiritual students, our presentation is the how we experience ourselves in the present moment as compared to how we would like to become in due time. So we said, the archangel is 50,000 and up. 50,000 and up, 50,000 for jacks for openers. And the supreme and ultimate realization, of course, is God as unmanifest as well as manifest, because that which is manifest is both manifest and beyond both. The ultimate reality is beyond either manifest or unmanifest, all of which are definitions of mind, and when mind stops, they're meaningless. So that was the first question for today. And now we should take a break for a snack, and we'll resume. So, okay, here's some interesting questions. And what's the value of a mantra? Well, a mantra depends, calibrating levels of energy is useful. Let's take one out of, there's a translation by Satchidananda of a famous spiritual classic. I forget the name of it. Let's do the mantra Aum, okay? What's the value of a mantra? Well, it depends on a lot of things. Aum is over 540. Aum, the mantra Aum calibrates over 600, 700, 720, 740, 750. The mantra Aum is in the 700s, resist, okay. Okay, now let's go Aum. The mantra Aum, Aum is over 600. Two, it's over 300. Aum, 300. It's over 310. Wow, well, whether you go Aum or Aum makes quite a bit of difference, right? You go Aum, you're going to take a long time to get enlightened, right? All right, so one reason for the lectures is that the comprehension speaking to you now is capable of explaining things that have been misunderstood. The reason for writing the books is to clarify things that are obvious with a capital O, but not obvious with a small O. So the purpose of the 12 lectures, the books and all, is to fortify that which is known in such a way that it is not misinterpreted later. To fortify it with such a bulwark of explanation, demonstration, and clarification that it can't be misunderstood. The ultimate mantra is either Aum or Aum, right? All right, so an authority such as Satchidananda translate, what is the book that somebody gives to translate? It's a great spiritual classic. Great spiritual classic. Well, I'm sure all kinds of people study it, and yet it contains very serious errors, you know, very serious errors. So the purpose is, first of all, to provide sufficient information that it would be sufficient to take one the whole way. To share the subjective reality of it, and also to provide a tool by which the person, like a compass, can find their own way through the woods. Huh? And to also warn of the pitfalls where many fall off. Seduction by that which sounds exotic, especially if it comes from some other realm. Everything from some other realm is called spiritual. There are many realms, and many of them are not where you want to go. Nor do you want to follow their advice, and yet it's commonly done because it comes from Master Gunk Gunk on the other side. The person goes to the swoon and says, Baba Butch is talking to me. He says, you should sell your livestock and move to Cincinnati and go out in the field and wait for the UFOs to come and reach you. Thank you, Baba. Yeah. So, no, if you're going to do any channeling trances, messages from the other side, you better calibrate them. Always calibrate the entity on the other side, because there are good people, because there are different realms. There's higher astral and lower astral. The highest astrals are called celestial. There are multiple heavens. There are multiple purgatories. There are multiple hells. And there are entities in various regions that would like to have influence in the human domain, that hate the human domain because the human domain contains the capacity to realize God, and the lower astral domain is those who have refused God, cursed God, or blasphemed God, as we demonstrated before with kinesiology, and which, as Jesus Christ said, cannot be forgiven. In other words, the belief in an avatar as one's savior is necessary up to level 600. And the savior can act in your behalf. Lotus Land Buddhism teaches that. Christianity teaches that. The Buddha of infinite compassion can speak for you, and you go to Lotus Land, Lotus Land, which is, it's heaven. And the Buddha becomes your intercessor. So you earn, by devotion, the right of an intercessor to speak in your behalf, because you of your own level of consciousness are not able to transcend all the domains. So the Christ speaks for you, the Buddha speaks for you, other saviors speak for you. And in that energy field, all can be forgiven. But it says some things cannot be forgiven. And it's well to pay attention, because that is a fact. It cannot be wiped off your slate by a great spiritual master. If it cannot be wiped off your slate by a great spiritual master, then it is undone by your living it out, experiencing it out. And the time in hell is beyond time. Don't forget that the lower levels of hell are just like the higher levels. They're beyond the form of time. And the lower levels of hell are beyond description. The agony is infinite, and it's forever. It's forever. Because it's forever, the horror of what has happened to you drowns on you. Therefore, to undo it karmically, one experiences that to which they have cursed somebody else. And now you experience the hell that you cursed them to, etc. All right, so there's various realms, heavenly realms. The higher astral are commonly called celestial. In the experiences I described to you today, there was never any other entity there. On the way to hell, I passed no devils. Donnie was correct. Donnie's description of hell was literally correct, exactly the way it is. The upper levels are torture and torment and agony and suffering and dismemberment, etc. But those are just jacks for openers. Then you get to the real hell, all that stops, and a nameless dread which goes on for eons. Eons prevail. In the higher realms, there are celestial beings, and many of them have been described in the spiritual literature. The White Brotherhood, the visions of the saints, and these are, to me, the higher celestial realms in which form still persists. The idea of an other is not conceivable when form disappears as a reality, there is no this and another that. So it's not within this experience of higher beings, guides and spiritual divine figures that come to you, they must be in higher celestial. What this is asking about is the higher celestial. All right, so there are celestial realms. Still within form, you might say, what, lower heavens, where form persists and divine figures. And, you know, frankly, that's good enough. I'll take lower heavens anytime, you know, it's a wonderful place. So form then can persist as devils. We can, people experience the presence of demonic figures, hellish figures, in the lower astral domains, and saintly figures and spiritual guides and angels and the others. I pretty much restrict myself to that which has been experienced as a reality, other things I've only heard about. So I differentiate that which I've heard about and that which I know, and I've never had to meet celestial beings. Native American spirituality, in calibrating, there's a current book I'm working on called All Stands Revealed. A number of Indian, Chief Detroit calibrates at 700. Chief Detroit, you know, Chief Detroit, there's a very famous quotation from Chief Detroit, which persists to this day. And he had quite a, he and the Indians in the East who had a Congress, you know, were pretty much the basis of the Constitution of the United States. The structure of the United States government is very much just nothing but the way it was in the Iroquois Nation. Anyway, Chief Detroit calibrates at 700, and the Native American Great White Spirit calibrates as a very high understanding of the of God. See, because it's God as present, both transcendent and imminent, in other words, the divinity of all living things. So the Native American sees the divinity of all that exists, which is put down in theology as pantheism. See, once you label a thing, you lose what it is. To see that the deer is divine is to be aware of the ultimate reality, that the Great White Spirit expresses itself as all of life, as all of life. Yeah? The Native American was quite enlightened spiritually. Various teachers, you see, some of the question came up about comparing teachers. You can't really compare teachers. Each teacher is what it is. If you calibrate the teaching of a teacher or the book by the teacher, you'll end up with a calibration level somewhere on this. Usually the great teachers are in the 500s. Once in a while, you'll hit one as high as 700. The Bhagavad Gita calibrates about 1,000. The teachings of Krishna. So each teacher then is teaching from a different level. The reason I talk about levels of consciousness, to know what level is being spoken of. If you read Ramana Maharshi and he tells you don't bother to save the world because the world you see doesn't even exist, that's about 740. But that's not the reality of the reader. Who says, what about the starving children? What about the cat that just got run over and has a broken leg? I mean, I'm supposed to just say that's in my imagination, you know what I'm saying? Is that meaningful or what? Yeah. So a teacher may be useful to you within a certain range. Teachers come up at various parts of your lifetime because of your karmic momentum, the place that you're at. So what's meaningful to you one level may not be meaningful to you at another. It's like comparing apples and oranges. This teacher Somebody mentioned during the break a teacher of great erudition, very well known. He's a teacher of great erudition. He is extremely well read in the spiritual literature and knows what is valuable to quote from each teacher. And when he gives a lecture, and he does a lot of lecturing, he quotes from one teacher after another because he sees the spiritual validity and value of it. So he himself is sufficiently high to recognize truth. You have to be at a certain level before you can even recognize it and begin to quote it. So a teacher like that is of value to tell you what, you know, the variety of things that are available. Certain approaches will appeal to you and others will not. Some approaches will appeal to you at certain times in your life and not at other times. The transmission of no mind, even the title, people say, huh? Wang Po, the transmission of no mind. That's about, what, 740? Mm. Wang Po, transmission of no mind, is over 700, 720, 730, 740, 750, 760. About 750. You see, because what we're talking about and we're leading to in these lectures is there's a lecture on Advaita, the way to God. It's said through mind, but its reality is the way to God through no mind. But the only way to get to no mind is through mind, and so therefore we'll get to no mind through mind by approaching it from no mind. Okay. So... Now that's meaningful to me. You folks know what I'm talking about. This has the specific calibrations of a number of people and government institutions. Now that is a really interesting subject, and it's the one I'm working on currently called All Stands Revealed, in which we're doing about 1,000 calibrations. And some of these we did on a demonstration tape called video number one, I think, Power versus Force. At the time we did that, we calibrated the FBI and the CIA and the alcohol, tobacco, and firearms, ATF. At the time, ATF, CIA, and FBI all made you go weak. And I think it's on that tape we did in 95, that the third level from the top in the CIA had a mole. And that there was a serious mole at a high level in the FBI. They've since hit the news, but generally government agencies calibrate at about 202. It seems to me like they're integrous because the law insists that they be that way. But they're not happy about it. Nor do you get much helpfulness or cheerfulness about it. It's like you're at the Motor Vehicle Bureau. You forgot to sign on line 6. You got to go back at the end of the line. Not just, you know, why not sign here and hand it to me? No, you've got to go back to the end of the line because you can, I mean, where's the heart? You know what I'm saying? That's 200. Listen, that's my job. I know my job, I have my job, and I do my job. That's 200. I know my job, and I do my job. And you can't fire them because they're doing their job. But you're not happy to be with them. And they don't seem to be happy with who they are or what their job is. But anyway, so it's perfunctory. 200 is perfunctory. It's integrous. If it says you got to be there from 8 to 5, by God, they're there from 8 to 5. And it says if your job is to run this computer and run these lists through you, that's what they do. So it's dependable in that, you know, it complies with the requirements of the job description. But it doesn't offer much beyond that. Cheerfulness is something else. You know, when you phone around these various companies, you get some of them, you get an 800 number, and then you get bounced around on this endless thing. And then sometimes you get into a circle. Did you ever get one of those? Punch 6 and that takes you to the menu, and then menu gives you 6 is your only way out of the menu. It takes you back to the menu. I don't think that's even 200, do you? I always say, you know, The application of the levels of consciousness to business are quite profound. A few people who have been here, a few people we work with, are endeavoring to take spiritual teaching into the commerce and industry business. As long as you don't label it spiritual, religious, or God, you get away with it. You can take it in the back door by calling it integrity that builds customer confidence, which shows up in the bottom line, and by God, and it does. Magali Rodriguez, who's a friend of ours, had written a chapter in the book on, she had been a nun and left the cloistered life and teaches spiritual principles to big corporations. Her own corporation got wiped out in the 9/11 disaster. Her own corporation was heavily involved in the World Trade Center there and got wiped out. But spiritual premises, if you take them into business, are very rewarding. Ours is a secular society, on one level it's secular, operationally it's secular. So you can't talk about things in spiritual terms or religious terms, but you can take the basic principles into business, and as Magali demonstrated, and she has the facts and figures in the chapter she did in the book that I'm quoting, it actually shows up in the bottom line. In Power versus Force, I used Walmart as an example, because I had corresponded with Sam and I recognized the integrity. Sam's ideal was integrity. Integrous products by integrous people and integrous surroundings, and his idea of treating employees was considerate, and etc. So he seemed to have heart. So let's see where Walmart is today. Can we do Walmart today? We have permission to do Walmart today. Resist. Well, let's do Walmart at the time of Sam Walton. Walmart at the time of Sam Walton is over 350, 380, 390. Walmart at the time of Sam Walton was 385, 390, 385. Remember where 385 is on our list? It's up there. It beats 200. It beats 200. I'd rather walk into Sam Walton's business than the nearest motor vehicle bureau. So, all right, here's where Sam took it. He took it up here to harmonious, hopeful, satisfactory. You can trust in them, made in America, optimistic, the future is going to be better. Forgiveness, we don't ask any questions, bring it back, we give you a refund or a replacement. That's a pretty darn high level of consciousness, isn't it? What do we say Walmart was at the time of Sam? What was the number? What was the number we got? 385? Okay. 385? 385, all right. We have permission to do this in this audience, resist. Walmart's at this time is below 385 resist. It's above 325, 330. All right. This last week's issue of Fortune magazine had a big article on Walmart, and it said that Walmart isn't exactly as great as it was at the time of Sam. I thought they were nitpicking a little bit, but you know, Walmart has become a giant colossus. It's hard to keep that folksy rural atmosphere when you're the biggest retailer in the world. How to keep it folksy when you've got Walmart now has 1 million employees. Can you believe a company that has 1 million employees and a major outlet in every major city in America and now crossing the world and Asia and all? I guess you can go to Walmart's in Hong Kong. So, but anyway, he built what has become the largest, most successful retailing experience in human history. And he did it from the integrity of 385. So anybody who questions whether or not spiritual values have any serious application to business, I only have to look at Walmart. It's funny, a writer for the Wall Street Journal called us up, I don't know, it was a month or two ago, right? You know, writing an article on this subject, wanting my views on it, the value of spiritual principles in the corporate world. And I referred him to Magali's article. And so to answer the question, do spiritual values have any practical application in the everyday world? Well, we just tell them, look at Walmart and see for yourself. Would you rather go to Walmart, or would you rather go and renew your license to the nearest motor vehicle bureau? I like Wally World, or whatever you call it, because in the front they always have coffee and sandwiches. You can sit down and put your feet up, and they always have the great bargains, and they try to express everything in Spanish and be, as there for the American public as they can be. In government bureaus, as I said, the United States is always being surprised, and it's always being surprised because it doesn't know anything, and it doesn't know anything because it comes out of the intellectualism of a political position. What is it, that amendment that forbid the CIA from employing people with a criminal background? Torricelli principle, was that a name? The governor from, or the congressman from some state. It was sort of a Dudley Do-Right kind of do-gooderism, kind of a Boy Scouty idea. That people with no criminal past should not be getting paid by the CIA to go out there and ferret out information. Anybody who's ever worked for the police department knows that's your only source of information. Who the hell do you think's going to tell you? Who do you think's going to tell you they're planning to rob the bank next door? Mrs. Simpson, all this behind you? She works at Walmart. She's not... How's she going to know they're planning a robbery? Oh, God. To find out about criminals, you have to deal with the criminal element. Anybody knows that. So that principle, which came out of the downside of intellectualism and idealism, utopianism, is why the United States is always being surprised. We always walk into the booby trap, and the excuse is always, we didn't know it was there. Pearl Harbor was the first, glaring example. Every single battle since then, we didn't know that there was 50,000 Nazi troops behind the mountain. Well, what do you mean you didn't know? How can you not know, if you're at war? How can you not know? You'd better know. I want all those people to give back their salary to the American taxpayer, frankly. To not know what was there at the Bay of Pigs. So the not knowingness is coming out of the downside of the 400s. It's mixing up utopia, a hope for. So the far left intellectual position, in my view of it, is the child. That's the wishful child who's believes in fairyland. We should talk to Bin Laden. The problem is you get blown up by mines trying to get to Bin Laden to talk to him. And if he captures you, he probably torture you to death because they like chopping up people and hearing them scream. Why do they enjoy torturing people to death? Why not just execute them? Because you don't get up in the hierarchy in the lower astral unless you can just demonstrate your capacity for heartless cruelty. That's how you get to be a kingpin. In the mafia, you're not a made guy until you kill somebody in front of witnesses. Now they know you're a fellow denizen of hell. You've proven it. And now you can be trusted to a certain level. All right, so the government agencies, if you calibrate them all, it's pretty disappointing. The FAA, for instance, extremely low. If you calibrate what is the level of integrity of the agency as an agency, you will usually get around 200. If you then we discovered, but what is the calibrated level of their everyday functioning in the world, and then you get a disappointment. Although the FAA may calibrate as an agency in its structure, formal structure, bureaucracy at 200, what does it operate at? There's a disparity, resist. The disparity is over 50 points, resist. Oh my God. We have permission to ask the FAA resist. The FAA, as a bureaucratic agency, calibrates over 200 resist. Oh, it doesn't. Oh. It calibrates over 198. Oh my God, it's gotten worse. Last time we did this, I think it was 200. It's over 198, 199. It's not quite integrous, even at the bureaucratic level. Now let's get what it is at the operational level. It's the FAA that sets the standards for who should be hired to run their hands all over you as you walk in, right? They just got the bright idea lately that women should do women and then men. Oh, I mean, that's duh. I mean, that's really bright, huh? The FAA operationally is over 140. So, all right, let's say the structure is integrous, but the way it is instituted is totally non-integrous. And you can tell by the everyday news the way the FAA functions. What's the name of that company that hired all the
criminals?
No, the people who check you over before you go on the plane. It was called something bright, Argon Bright, okay. Well, the people that check you out when you go through the x-ray and all were all hired by Argon Bright Resist, Argon Bright Corporation, yeah. Argon Bright calibrates, we have permission to do Argon Bright Resist, calibrates over 160. Argon Bright doesn't even calibrate over 160. So here's the people you're trusting your life to, thank you. Here's the people you're trusting your life to, calibrates over 160, not integrity, you know what I mean? They're way down the scale here, you know? Way down in here. And you're getting on the plane saying, I trust my life to this guy. Oh, golly. I can't imagine that they only just got the smart idea that women should check out women and men. I mean, you know, it was on the thing for weeks, and I'm sitting there, I think, that'd be simple, wouldn't it? Instead of...
You better quit talking about this. No one's going to come hear you again.
What?
You better quit talking about it, or no one's going to come hear you again.
Why is that?
They won't get on a plane.
Oh, they won't get on a plane. All right, then they ask other famous people. So a lot can be learned. And once you see the panorama, it's like you've got the map of human civilization. And when you calibrate, you know, Henry VIII, Julius Caesar, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, Churchill, you begin to see the enormous, you know, Churchill calibrated at 5'10". Churchill, FDR calibrated at 499. Most of the presidents of the United States calibrate in the 450s. To be an effective caliber, you can ask, what is the requirement of this office? The requirement to be an effective president of the United States is what, 450. Happily, almost all of our presidents have been 450 or over, or 460. Anyway, it takes 450. If you ask, what does it take to run a giant world church, the Pope, for instance, the ideal for a religious leader to run a world organization, such as the Catholic Church, is around 570. If you go to 600, you're going to bliss out. The heck with the church, you're not going to pay attention. You have to have a lot of organizational ability, a lot of political moxie, a lot of knowingness. You got to be able to deal with all the heads of state. You have to do this in the context of a religious history that goes back thousands of years and is under fire, et cetera, in a complex political state. So you need around 570. 570 is almost saintly. If you watch this present Pope as he tries to make peace with the various factions around the world, you get the sense of presence. You get a sense of presence. And the current Pope calibrates around 570. Resist. Okay. The Dalai Lama serves the same function, a world function, as the leader of a world church and all that it represents. The Dalai Lama is also around 570. So when you get what are presidents, Mother Teresa is about 700.
What about Bush?
Bush is around 460 or so. He's a great, you know, he's a Yale graduate and a very smart man. 455, 460, 465. Yeah, he's around 460.
What
That's a bright president. In other words, you got to be smart. You have to deal in the world of form, politics, power, bureaucracy, fundraising, charm, and verbal capacity. You have to have verbal fluency. You can't get up in front of a TV audience and bumble and get elected unless you're Bush. See, because Bush does it out of a certain context. You know the man is integrous on the level that he represents. You may or may not agree with his level, but he does come out of an old-fashioned, right or wrong, Christian-oriented, good old Texas boy. The good guys go there and the bad guy goes there. What's the confusion, you know what I mean? So he gets away with it because of his integrity on the moral level, see? If he was running for president of Harvard, he wouldn't get away with it because their moral integrity is not a... it's not a requirement. Was that said by this entity here? No, the president of a university has a different requirement, see? So you can't say that one level is better than another. You'd have to say better for what? Otherwise, we're comparing apples and oranges. The highest calibrated unit that we got in World War II was the Tuskegee Air Force. The Tuskegee Air Force had the most perfect record, the greatest number of kills, the smallest number of losses. It was an all-black, they were all black airmen. And they calibrated extremely high. Well, you had to be extremely high if you were black in order to get into the Air Force. So these were all high-level people in which intention was extremely powerful, and they set up one of the greatest records in World War II. So you learn a great deal by studying history, calibrating the levels of the various events. You can calibrate the level of the events. You can, with kinesiology, find out exactly what happened. Was the U.S. informed before Pearl Harbor or not? Who was informed? What did they do with it and why? So I don't like to do a lot of these things in public. But what goes on behind the scenes is accessible because anything is registered in the field of consciousness, it's available to kinesiology. When you ask a question of kinesiology, you know, we ask permission. And sometimes you'll get a no. Sometimes you'll get a flat no. Sometimes you'll get, if you try to find out the why of the no, you may or may not find out the why of no. Usually you'll find out the why of the no. Sometimes you won't even get the why of the no. Yeah, we said that the time of death is karmically set. Can you find out the time of your own death? You'll always get the answer no. It's a general fact, but in your particular, to know yourself is not allowed. It just says it's not allowed. Am I allowed to know the exact time and date of my own death? It says no. It would probably have a deleterious effect, wouldn't it? Huh? Probably have a deleterious effect. And the churches would be loaded, though, if everybody knew. So anyway, we can check out the great gurus of history. As I said, a lot of the great gurus are not as living beings what they were at their highest of their writings because you might say that which is in contrast to that which you become, which as a spiritual teacher, I guess I have to cover. You see, as you go up in levels of consciousness, you begin to pull to yourself that which challenges it. That which challenges it. There are certain levels. I don't know if I should, maybe we should do that in the book I'm doing now, in another chapter. There are certain levels at which rather specific things come at you. And I think a spiritual teacher should prepare, it's a responsibility of a spiritual teacher, to inform you of the downside. Unconditional love seems to trigger. You go into a state of joy, seems to seems to bring up its opposite choice. In this particular experience, that which brought it up was quite surprising. It comes up suddenly out of nowhere. It can come up through a person. This person I was speaking to was a spiritual teacher well-known, and well-known locally, in fact, who had described an excellent spiritual technique. And this teacher then said, well, we won't go, that's later in the story. Anyway, in that, all of a sudden, this spiritual teacher, oh, I know what it was, wanted me to be director of this organization nationwide, you know. And I said, wow, we can give it to all the monks and all the monasteries, and just think of all the people struggling with sin, and sin is just an attachment. If you know how to release the attachment, sin disappears, you know. Sin is just a pejorative epithet with which we describe certain behaviors, but these behaviors are just attachments. So I wanted to give it to the world, and I thought, oh, wow, you know, give the world a way to free yourself from guilt and sin and all this crap. At this point, the teacher suddenly went into a rage. The teacher's personality disappeared, and it was like an entity from hell. It was a horrible energy. And suddenly began to speak in another voice and said, Jesus and Buddha are just astrals. You should never give away spiritual truth. A thing is only as good as what you pay for it. The higher the truth, the more the charge. He began to describe certain industrialists as having done more for mankind than Jesus Christ and Buddha, because they were just astrals anyway. And then the conversation got even dumber. The temptation is, in that case, was the temptation as you go up seems to be best described as luciferic. Satanic has to do with pain, suffering, war, the satanic energies, rape, pillage, drugs, devastation, inner city street gangs, the satanic rules there. Exxon, the luciferic. That's power for its own sake. And the manifestation of power is financial gain. And what happens on that level of consciousness was a knowingness came to me, a knowingness. This was beyond, the experimentation with going into the void. That which is the void in this lifetime was triggered again. And the way you get to the void of nothingness is by releasing on the attributes of God, seeing love as an attachment, beauty, the grace of God is attachments that are holding you back from the ultimate truth. The luciferic persuasion can sound quite convincing. I'm just abbreviating it now. But the way it went was the way it came. It came as a knowingness. There was nobody there, but the knowingness came as an expression. Now that you know you're beyond personal karma, because at that point one is beyond form, it was quite an enlightened state. Let's see what the level that temptation came at. That temptation came at over 600, 650, 700, 720, about 720. All right, the knowingness was, now that you know you're beyond personal karma, because you're not answerable to any arbitrary God, because no such God exists, and you've already transcended identification with all of form in the human ego, therefore, own infinite power as your own. Well, it came across as a very convincing understanding, obviously had been presented to many others in the past, and this was a rather arid, it was almost like compared to a high mountain pass. No one there. No one hardly ever had been there. And I could see who had been there and what answer they had given. The appeal was infinite power, power over others, power for its own sake, power for its own sake. The only, of course, what was wrong with it was completely devoid of love. No love. Just power to own power for its own sake is apparently a temptation. So the spiritual student who is not prepared for it goes into a very high state, begins to pull up its, I'm going to call it contrary, not its opposite, but its contrary choice. So to choose power for its own sake then is the temptation of the Luciferic when you get to a very high level. The Luciferic is the temptation of power for its own sake, usually expressed in our domain as wealth, wealth. So Enron is the expression of the Luciferic. The satanic would be Adolf Hitler. The Luciferic is money and wealth and power and position for its own sake, for its own sake. The satanic would use that to cause suffering to others. So Nazi Germany, the Japanese in Nanking would exhibit the satanic energy. So the temptation then can come up and you're unprepared for it. And the ingenuity with which it can be presented, I am underplaying. It can be extremely ingenuous. It's been probably been developed for thousands of years by various entities who rule over other domains. And what they're really inviting you to is to join their domain and become one of them. Just as the mafia invites you to become a made guy by executing this guy in front of witnesses, they invite you to enjoy and become part of the satanic lower astral realm. So those things apparently happen to various people at various times. It can happen to people within the secular domain as well as within the spiritual domain. In calibrating the levels of consciousness of people throughout time, as we said, Napoleon started out quite high, then fell to the megalomania. So the other temptation is that of vanity. The vanity of megalomania. If we said that the top of the levels of consciousness is God, then the bottom is the ego. The bottom is the ego and the glorification of the ego as God. The I, the small a, to glorify the small a, to worship the small I is to become the egomaniac. So when Milosevic feels not the slightest contrition, feels it's his perfect right to destroy millions of people merely because they disagree with him or represent something he doesn't like, this is the expression of megalomania. So the ego, the unbridled ego then, when it is glorified, becomes the opposite of God, which entitles the person to go to the lower astral domains. So their person then is there by choice. By denying the reality of God and declaring that the ego is God, that makes the I, the small I, the center of the ego, God instead of divinity as God. So that's how one gets to the bottom instead of the top. The difficulty with religions has been their confusion of the top with the bottom, and as I've said before, the Old Testament is the source of that. If you check out the Old Testament with kinesiology, all the books of the Old Testament make you go weak, with the exception of three: Proverbs, Psalms, and Genesis. All the rest make you go extremely weak. And in the New Testament, of course, Revelation calibrates at 70. Its author is John. Let's see what the source of Revelations is. We have permission in this audience. Resist. The source of Revelations is a fellow named John. Resist. He calibrates at 70. Resist. And what he had was a hallucination and vision of the lower astral domain. Resist. Okay. So all these predictors, these revelations of horrors, California falling off in the ocean, the end times, is all true, but it's only true within the astral domain. So One thing a spiritual student has to be clear is that what applies to the astral domain applies to the astral domain, in which there's a replica of this world as we know it, but it has a different karma. It's ruled by different energies and entities. So what is predicted for the astral domain is not what is predicted for this earth. And there's a number of teachers around Sedona who've had the same vision, shared the same vision. Everybody got ready for the end times, dug underground homes, et cetera, sat around waiting for the end times. California did not fall off the ocean. The end times did not occur. So to not realize which domain you're speaking of, to be clear, if confused, you can check with kinesiology. The end times is describing a different domain. Resist. It's a different domain. If you experience that domain, you experience it as reality. It's not like imagination. It's when you're in that domain, then you experience the experience of that domain as a reality. A person who slips because of brain chemistry over into that reality experiences that as though it is actually happening. And the reason you can't get them out of saying that they experienced it as really happening is because they did experience it as really happening. A dream is real when you're in the dream. A nightmare is a nightmare, is an experiential reality. In the middle of the nightmare, you're experiencing that nightmare as a reality. That nightmare is not the same as the waking domain of reality is, of course, the differentiation between the two. So a lot of the spiritual errors that have arisen, religious errors, have arisen because of lack of capacity to know one domain from another. So the lower astral domains, just like the higher, are ruled by entities. Each of them have names. So the gods of the celestial regions have names, and so do the gods of the lower astral regions. Strict and narrow is the pathway. The Buddha was correct. Strict and narrow is the pathway. The Buddha also describes similar temptations. Jesus Christ describes similar temptations. The Lucifer came to him directly the same. It was exactly the same, undoubtedly the same entity, same energy. Is that the same energy? It's not an entity, it's an energy. Resist. It's an energy, resist. We have permission to ask if it's an entity, resist. It's an entity, resist. It's not an entity, no. It's a knowingness of a certain energy field, and it comes into your consciousness that way. Remember, Jesus was tempted by Lucifer, was it? The devil, somebody, offered him power over this domain. And the Buddha describes similar temptations. So what I'm trying to convey from experience as well as available literature, the spiritual student is often naive, you know, wanders off in the desert with a pint of water and a pair of sandals. It takes more than a pint of water and a pair of sandals to reach enlightenment. It's a strict and narrow pathway. It's rigorous. It's demanding. It's beset with pitfalls. That which is in the lower astral, its greatest pleasure is to pull people off the straight and narrow. The fact that you're on the straight and narrow is what makes you a nice prize, a nice plump one to pull off with one temptation or another. That's the source of glee of the demonic, is that they've seduced an innocent one. To kill the innocent is the way you rise in the lower astral. It's by killing innocent babies you really get to be somebody. Take a bayonet and bayonet the child and the infant in the mother's arms gets you really up in the hierarchy, gets you higher than the mafia. The mafia only kills bad guys. Try killing an innocent baby, that'll really get you there, baby. You gotta be cold, heartless, cruel. The ultimate of the opposite of goodness. So all these various realms have their own hierarchies. They're complex. They have their own literature. There's a lot of well-known books in the spiritual bookstore, which all of you know. You've all run into them. Let's ask about, what's that one? I have permission to ask about that book in the Soviet Resist. The Urantia book celebrates over 200 resists. Urantia is a well-known book. It's a channeling from some other domain. In the Urantia hierarchy of beings and teachers is even Jesus Christ. All right, so before you get enamored of any spiritual teaching, calibrate the energy field of the teaching. And the other thing you can ask is whether it's suitable for me. It may be a very high teaching. And I say, is that suitable for me? He says, no. Why? Because at this level, I would misinterpret it. It would be injurious. So the willingness to surrender to God means to, let's say operationally, if you get a no from a kinesiologic question, to question why, come up with an answer, and then the willingness to comply with it. All pathways are pathways through the heart, because all pathways are the willingness to surrender. The ego's delusion that it is capable of knowing reality. The ego is not capable of knowing reality. By definition, the ego can't know reality, by reality with a capital R. By definition, it's a telescope that doesn't go that far. You know what I mean? It's a 12x telescope. And you're trying to see into the next galaxy. You can't see the next galaxy with a 12x. You know what I mean? Okay, anybody got any questions? We've covered a lot of stuff, and enough to offend at least half a dozen people, right? If we hit your favorite spiritual teacher and found out that he's only 42, well, somebody's got to tell you. You see, spiritual disillusionment is very, very painful to become enamored of a certain teacher and then later discover that teacher is not integrous is horrible. It's really horrible. These people, I've seen some in the office, some I've known in the spiritual community, these people almost to the brink of suicide. It's worse than a marital infidelity. It's worse than the boss telling lies behind your back. It's like the ultimate double crossing. It's like the double. And you discover that the person you thought, you know, there's all kinds of gurus that calibrate below 200, and I've traveled a little bit around the spiritual circuit myself, and you see pictures of this guru there, and there, and incense is going, and hearts, and flowers, and fruit. And the guy calibrates 120, you know what I'm saying? Takes more than sandals, incense, and robes, and shaved head, and sitting on tiger skin to make a guru. We're running out of tiger skin, so that used to be you always had to sit on a tiger skin and be half naked.
Could you speak a little bit about right livelihood?
You're talking about integrity. You know, the Buddha was a teacher about right livelihood, one of the Eightfold Pathway. It means that to be integrous in one's endeavors within the world by which you make a living, he recommended that you not be a butcher and things like that, that the accumulated negative karma of constantly killing life in return for money would undo a great deal of spiritual merit. Buddhism and Far Eastern language tend to talk of merit, you know, spiritual merit. So integrity has to do with intention. We said it's spiritual level of has to do with intention. The spiritual will. When you do spiritual work, you're really doing it from the center of your spiritual will. So you want to get away from thinking there's a personal I doing that. There's no personal I there. Consciousness is impersonal. You make a decision from your spiritual will. It's your spiritual will, because your spiritual will has infinite power. Your spiritual will is unstoppable. Spiritual will allow you to get burned at the stake and you won't flinch an inch from what you believe in. That takes spiritual will. The ego doesn't have that kind of strength. The mind doesn't have that kind of strength. Spiritual will, though, is extremely powerful. That's why the Buddha said, once you have heard of enlightenment, the end is certain. Once you've even heard of enlightenment, the end is certain. Because once the spiritual will hears that enlightenment is possible, it clicks onto it. And now it begins to reorganize the intention of all the intricacies of the ego. And somehow you just find yourself in the right place and moving in a certain direction. That's the result of spiritual will. So integrity then is a decision. The reason I used Sam Walna's example was because he seemed to represent in a widely experienceable way the value of integrity in business. Because of that integrity which radiates out, the consumer has confidence that if it's broken and you take it back, they'll give you another one. And of course, experientially, I have done that, and by God, they do give you another one. If they can't give you another one, they fix it. So at least there is the intention of integrity. So integrity is extremely important. I think in the spiritual community, in government, it would be profoundly unworkable. I don't know, you're going to get reelected if you're going to be integrous, you know what I mean? It's that pork barrel law that gets you the votes, and if you're going to be integrous, and no, we don't need a road that goes 300 miles into the desert and then stops in a pile of sand, and then you would have to be honest, and how would you get elected? Some variance with integrity is necessary on certain levels.
What is the difference between illumination and enlightenment?
Between what? Illumination
and enlightenment.
Generally, illuminated refers to, I think, 600 and over. It's denoted in art, usually as a halo. If you calibrate the energy level with a halo, that which it signifies is 1,000. Sainthood or above. The general public would say that anybody into the high 500s is already illuminated. The saintly person, we think of the saintly person as reflecting the light of divinity by their patience and all the classic virtues, patience and tolerance and truthfulness and integrity. Illumination, let's go for I think we had illumination on here on that other chart.
Yeah, it's
up there. Did we?
600.
Oh, it is, yeah, okay. Okay, let's just ask, we have permission to ask. Illumination is over 550, 580, 590, 599, 600. 601. Yeah, 600 is a level of illumination. It's because the presence of the self is felt like a light. It's seen as the light of consciousness. It's, you're conscious of that which in ordinary life you take for granted and never realize what it is. You never look at it. Just like in this room, you're aware of the contents of the room, but you're not aware of the space in the room. I mean, your focus is not on the space here. Your focus is on the content. Enlightenment becomes that you're aware of the field. You're aware of the field itself, out of which the content becomes meaningful. It's because of the non-form of the field that the full world of form makes any sense. It is by virtue of that which is non-linear that anything linear can be discerned. If space wasn't full of nothingness, you couldn't see somethingness in it. That sounds all right, folks. Yeah.
What's the relationship between beingness and consciousness?
Between beingness and what?
Consciousness.
Well, consciousness is the quality that would allow the awareness of beingness. The fact that you realize, know that you are. Let's ask about the cat. Kitty knows that he is. Resist. The cat knows that it is. So you might say that's primordial, right? Primordial. It is by virtue of consciousness that Kitty is aware that he is. Kitty has consciousness, which comes out of existence. Kitty has knowingness of existence. Kitty has capacity to identify it, resist. No. Can't identify it, but knows that it is. When you look into any animal's eyes, it's instantly obvious that it knows that it is. It knows that it is. It's aware of existence. Did I answer the question?
I was thinking about it a different kind of way, I guess.
What'd you say?
She was thinking about it in a different way.
Oh. You see, existence is a statement. Beingness, being is a transitive verb. Intransitive verb. Isness, beingness, havingness, isness are all verbs. In a verb, there has to be a this and a that. When you add beingness or amness, you're saying that there is something that has that quality. That's why amness has not described to me what the ultimate reality is. Amness implies that there is something that has that quality of beingness. That's what an intransitive verb means. That implies a duality, which is not my own experience of reality, which is non-duality. The radical truth is there is no this experiencing of that, such as a quality of beingness or isness. Yeah? That awareness is illuminated by virtue of consciousness itself. So that statement came out of consciousness. About beingness. Yes. Come up ahead and say whatever you'd like to say. And I'll repeat the question.
Doctor, earlier you referred to 600 above levels of consciousness that the physical body would become incapacitated. And I was wondering, at that point, I guess that individual is close to a pure level of consciousness, and that function at that time, the physical function, ceases really to exist and needs help. So the function of that physical body is purposeless at that time.
I can't hear him.
You're going to have to come
You
up
tell me here. What he said.
It's a very detailed.
Oh, come on up here and we'll discuss it and put up your dukes. Okay, let's have it again.
Okay. You indicated that at 600 and above, the higher levels of consciousness, that the body would become incapacitated, basically.
Well, not that the body is incapacitated.
To the point where it would need help to exist.
It's more that one's indifferent to it. The state is so complete and perfect, then there is no wantingness. You see, to move something, you have to have a wantingness. All wantingness disappears. You know you want.
The physical functions are still there as far as...
They seem to operate in a delayed way. I think many of the basic physiologic functions do stop. Breathing will even stop. And only if somebody entreats you do you breathe again. Yeah.
And Buddha.
So 50% of the people leave the body at that point. They don't bother breathing again. I had no interest in breathing again. Okay. But somebody loved me a great deal. So I could see that he believed that I would be dead if I didn't breathe. Because of his belief that I would be dead, I breathed.
Okay.
Otherwise, he would be in grief.
So did Jesus and Krishna and Buddha have physical functions then when they were at 1,000, say, level of consciousness?
Well, the Buddha had a great deal of difficulty. And I only felt relieved about it when in Korea there was a Buddhist Bible in the hotel room. And Susan's reading and she says, the Buddha said he was racked with pain and all his bones were cracked and all. I said, oh, wow, that explains the whole thing. No problem. Let's see, what happened with Jesus? Well, don't forget, they're different karmic patterns. The Jesus never spoke of, he only spoke of enlightenment. In one place, in Matthew, he says, Isaiah has returned to us as John the Baptist. Now, I don't know whether he meant that literally as a reincarnation of John the Baptist, or he meant the spirit, that spirit which prevailed in Elias is the same spirit that prevailed. I didn't know whether he meant physical reincarnation or not. But certainly, neither karma nor reincarnation, karma as such as a topic, as understood in the Eastern world, is a subject in Christianity. Jesus Christ had no previous physical lifetimes. He never had any personal, physical, human karma. As it says in Scripture, he literally did descend from heaven. Huh. The Buddha, on the other hand, had had many previous lifetimes and recalled them with great clarity. And then anybody who goes over 600, it's just a memory. It's not like another lifetime. It's all one continuity in which you remember being in Cleveland, you remember being in Honolulu, and okay. It's just a memory, see? What was the rest of the question?
That was pretty much the question, basically. I think you did a good elaboration.
Yes, whether a person can function. Yes, right.
Yeah.
Well, as I say, half the people at 600 don't function. And it's karmic propensity. It happened several times that if there had not been some, both of them had to do with love. The experience in the snowbank, there was no desire to breathe or re-enter the body or become one with the body again. There was no interest in the body. And I mean, the state is complete and total. There's no need for a body, desire for a body. There's nothing, no physicality that has any appeal. And my father had discovered where I was, traced the paper route. And we had a 29 Model A Ford. This is hysterical. 29 Model A Ford, which we'd paid $15, by the way. And Dad found me. So here is this shaking my knee, and I'm asked to do that which I did not want to do more than anything. But if I had not resumed breathing and come back to the body, he would have thought I was dead. He believed in the body, you know, if the body's dead, you're dead. So I could see he believes that I would be dead, which would cause great grieving. And I love my father a great deal. Don't breathe. And it happened another time, similarly, somebody who loved me a great deal. See, the people around you all believe in death. So it makes it very hard to leave your body if you have any close friends, associates, wife or something, because they're going to grieve and miss you because they think you're dead. And therefore, 600 and over, it's probably best to be a monk living off by yourself. And if you don't breathe again, they will figure that you probably had a heart attack or something, and everybody will be fine. Yes?
Is it important for you to know what level you are, and what would be the most important thing one could do each day to either maintain or increase
their
consciousness?
You see, in describing these levels, you can pretty much guess where you are without, you know, using kinesiology. You can tell what are the devils that besiege you, you see? What is the primary emotionality? What is your view of yourself? And what is your view of God? Pretty much tells you where you are. You know what I mean? God hates me. I'm depressed all the time. I hate myself. I can hardly get out of bed in the morning. Well, you're about 50, aren't you, right? On the other hand, I'm in love with life. I hate to waste time just being asleep in bed. I can't wait to jump out till 4:30 in the morning. And I'm in love with nature and animals, and every animal I see, I just love it. You have to control yourself, because that does happen. Luckily, you don't run into any tigers, because you would probably hug the tiger. You know, you just love that tiger. I love that tiger. Love that tiger. Yeah. You can pretty much know where you are. It's sort of academic interest, you know. Like, this audience is obvious without even calibrating it, you know, in the mid-400s. And people who attend a thing like this, you know, are usually quite erudite and already are pretty well, pretty knowledgeable and pretty well intended, you know, to take out a whole day of your time and devote it. You know, people who are not interested in enlightenment really aren't going to blow a whole day. And they could be watching baseball on TV or something. Yes.
Could you speak to Sai Baba? I have a friend that really crushed by the current status of Sai Baba.
Sai Baba, the current status of
Sai Baba. I don't want to do him.
I
don't think I want to do living Babas that are, you can do it on your own and be prepared for whatever you find out. I have not known many people like that. You know, when you speak of visions, divine entities, hearing God's voice, it's not within my experience. You see, because divinity, that which is God, is not different than the self. So who would there be to speak to whom? You see, that's... In other words, in duality, there's a this and a that. There would be a this being spoken to by a that. That is not the experience that has been here. There is no this and a that. There is no other to speak to this. The advancing awareness, because the awareness does advance from 600 on up, you know, astonishing things just come out of the blue, is coming from within. It's a knowingness. It's like a cauliflower that's grown a new thing. It's coming from itself. It's not of a different essence. That which grows out of the cauliflower is just the essence of cauliflowerness, you know? It's not an otherness. It's not like a beanstalk creates a cauliflower, see? So with nurturance and for some karmic reason, that awareness, that knowledgeness, that knowingness, the realization is one really of comprehension, the capacity to how to contextualize it so that you can say it. It doesn't change the reality of that which you are or that which you're experiencing as self, because that's total and complete. It doesn't need any understandings. To be, however, if you're committed to teaching, then the capacity to be able to fluently language that and explain it. Okay? So comes the awareness, wow, the Buddha never spoke of previous lifetimes because he never had any. This is how we did it. The Buddha, wait a minute, I'm sorry. Jesus Christ never had any previous physical lifetimes resistant. That was just annoyingness. You know, I don't need that. No, it doesn't change who or what I am or what the reality is. The Buddha, however, did resist. Isn't that fascinating? I mean, it's interesting. The fact that there's multi dimensions, the fact that there's multi heavens, multiple heavens. So all the people that you think are on mistaken pathways, you can't worry about them. They're all going to heaven. Yeah, there's Valhalla. There's all these heavens. If a kamikaze pilot does it for the sake of the emperor, for the sake of truth, for the sake of the sun god. Shintoism is the sun god of whom the emperor is the divine representative. If he's doing it for the divinity of God as represented in Shintoism by his emperor, then why shouldn't he go to an integrous place? He did it out of integrity, right? We might say he's mistaken. We might say that that the Islamic terrorists are mistaken. I don't know, I've never checked where they're going to go, but they didn't tell them the 72 versions are all 900 years old. I told them that joke last time. I mean, that joke came out of the blue also. I didn't make that joke up. People say, did you make that joke up? No, I'm riding along the highway and all of a sudden it breaks me up. So these funnies that come happen of their own. I have nothing to do with them. And it just breaks me up. I said, that's hysterical. They're 900 years old. I would think, too, if you actually believe that killing infidels is a way of praising Allah, I imagine that's integrous. The intention is integrous, resist. The belief system is correct, resist. That what their experience of heaven, in other words, their destination is preset by their spiritual intention, resist. So their spiritual intention, you know, we could look at it from a different viewpoint and say it's really stupid, but I mean, if bin Laden killed off 3,000 Americans, he's only got 300 million to go. He better get busy. You're going to have to kill 3,000 every second to make any inroads because we propagate faster than that, right?
Doesn't that make bin Laden then the same as what you also tested for?
What did she say?
Does that mean?
He may well, yes, except that we have tested him and he's 70. So his intention, his belief system is different. You see, there's those who are naively zealous, and then there's those who, for political reasons, use the naively zealous for their own ends. So the patriotism of the soldier has been traditionally misused throughout history by the emperor, who does it for his own personal gain, and couldn't care less whether 10,000 gets slaughtered. That doesn't mean the soldier's not integrous. He's doing it for what he considers the motherland and his duty as a man and to his wife and family. And
innocence,
right, you got it. So innocence is the big hole in the wall where the wolf gets in via the sheep's clothing. It is the one that the Luciferic uses and the Satanic both use. It's because a man's not knowing truth from falsehood that he's vulnerable. See, mankind thinks he's the software. Actually, he's the hardware. But he has no protective circuit that can differentiate. Puts in the software, there's nothing that goes bank, 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 falsehood. No. Whatever the software, this sounds as good as this software. All software sounds good, otherwise it wouldn't sell. So one reason that enlightenment is statistically rare, is because you first of all have to have an intense commitment. There has to be a certain karmic setup for it. You have to have had the good fortune of running into good teachers. You have to have fallen into the soup and found a way out. You know, this entity fell into the soup, painful soup. Get to the pits of hell, you got to make some big errors, right? Karmically throughout time, some bad decisions. And then came along the way out, see? All right, so integrity is what carries us through. In business and spiritual work, our intention is what carries us through. Doesn't mean we won't make mistakes, but it's very difficult to make the whole trip. And even the best teachers don't forewarn some of their students about what happened. They just notice there aren't as many there next week. they don't tell you what happened to them. We had 18 last week, 14 this week. What happened to the other four guys? Oh, on the road to Damascus. Yeah.
Would that map of consciousness work for after this life, into an afterlife?
Well, that's another lecture, death in the afterlife. We said that the infinite okay, we're going to stop in a couple minutes. We said that that which is infinite and manifests itself as all the universes is like a giant electromagnetic field in which, through spiritual intention, it's as though you set the polarity and charge on the little iron filing we call yourself or your spirit. And its afterlife is automatically the consequence of what it has become by virtue of the power of the field. That's why the judgment is God, of God is perfect. Nothing is where it should not be, because it can only be where it is by virtue of what it is. Therefore, a cork in the water is exactly where it is based on its buoyancy. Yeah? So. All right, we're going to have to close up. What I'll do is I'll talk to you personally, because we have to clear the... What time do we have to be out of here? I don't know.
Well, you're signing books. And
you
have to be out of here by 5.
Yes, okay, I'll be here by 5. What?
We have to see where the audience has moved to now.
Oh, yes. The level of consciousness of the group. We have permission to do this in front of the group, resist. We're over 435, 436, 437, 438, 439, 440, 441, 442. Went up 7 points. Mm-hmm. You do that every day in a year, you're going to be... You can open your own church. our research shows that the average person will just repeat it, because we do this, you know. The average person, consciousness advances 5 points in a lifetime, is it? 5 points in one lifetime, one lifetime. You know what it takes to go through one lifetime, all the agony, pitfalls, pains, contrition, penance, God knows what all it takes to go 5 points. At the same time, within a certain field of consciousness, certain information becomes like catalytic. I like catalytic, because it isn't just what a thing calibrates at, but its quality. You know, its quality. And some information is catalytic. To just hear it changes it. If you know that the time of your death is set, you can say, well, I'm going to quit worrying about it. Right? I mean, it's a relief just to know that. To know that there's multiple heavens. You don't have to be afraid, gee, maybe I'm studying the wrong teaching, I'll end up in the wrong place. No, there's heavens for everybody, see? Because intention is what sends it. Krishna says that in the Bhagavad Gita, does he not? Krishna says, from the viewpoint of the Supreme, he was at 1,000, he said, those that worship me, even though they are mistaken, and call me by other names, by virtue of their devotion, will be one with me. So, that made me feel better when I read that. That the infidel, even though, I mean, what, you know, some, this one calls this one an infidel, by the purity of their devotion to that which they consider divine. So, the devotion to that which one considers divinity itself is sufficient guarantee to become one with the Supreme. So that's a comforting notion. I believe in sharing that which is comforting, and also sharing information where the edge of the cliff is. Where the edge of the cliff is. Yeah. Okay? And then we'll quit. And then I'll talk to you all individually. Anybody has any further questions, I'll be glad to answer them. A lot of times people ask us specific books and specific teachers, and they're a little time consuming to do them, but we can do them if we get a chance. Certain teachers get asked over and over again, and I know what they are. That which is integrous speaks of its own, and with sufficient spiritual experience, you get to almost intuitively pick up where it is. That which is non-integrous begins to have certain signs that you begin to recognize. The guru has 97 Mercedes-Benzes. You say, what? You know what I mean? Just like the opposite. You know, the other day, one last story from the world, and then we'll quit. The other day, this story in Arizona Republic, I get all my information from the Arizona Republic. some young man is cleaning his gun. and accidentally, while cleaning his gun, shot his three-year-old. I thought, well, now when you look at that, that's interesting. First of all, he had to violate the basic principle. You don't clean a gun with a family member in the same room. Then he had to forget that he had the safety off. Then he had to forget that there was a bullet in the chamber. Then he had to forget and pull the trigger. Then, with meticulous accuracy, in a 360-degree sphere, he had to pick out exactly where the child was, and they're always shot dead. Whenever somebody's shot dead accidentally while cleaning a gun, it's almost fatal. They don't just shoot off their left ear. You never read that a guy shot off the toes of his brother-in-law. You never read that somebody shot up their motorcycle by mistake. What's the name of the favorite motorcycle?
Harley-Davidson.
Nobody ever shot their Harley-Davidson by mistake in a cleaning their gun accident. Isn't that strange? Think about it, okay.
Thank you, everybody.
I want to thank you all because I do enjoy and love everyone here. It's your love that I experience. Yeah, maybe, I give thanks.